Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I feel like Danielle Walsh, you know, the one from...
Oh my God. Yes.
Like, let's get lit.
Yeah. So for Paris tonight, let me show you what we're drinking.
She would use that as a mixer.
What's up, hot queens?
Did you bring the baby gherkins?
This is when I really felt like maybe we shouldn't do this podcast.
Astronomical.
I hate to see it.
Wasted potential.
Are you drunk?
I am so drunk right now.
Welcome to Bad Author Book Club, where we're not like other authors, we're worse. I'm Ryan LaSala.
And I'm Claribel A. Ortega, and we're two authors reading the most bizarre fiction we can find. Before we get started, gonna do a little plug for our socials. If you want to follow us on social media, we're on Anchor at anchor.fm/badauthorbookclub. Are we still using Twitter? I guess so.
Kinda.
I think,
but we're
we
not calling it
out
X.
Eventually.
Yeah,
I refuse.
We're not doing that.
We'll do it maybe like one or two more times, and then we'll, like, I don't know, we'll find another home.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us on Twitter at Bad Author Pod, Instagram at Bad Author Book Club, and our website is badauthorbookclub.wordpress.com.
Bam! Wow, wow, wow! And our Discord, it's in the show notes. Come chat with us, girly girls, and
hang out.
Baby boys, and... sexy days, them.
Baby days.
The baby days. Yeah, in my world, everyone's a girly girl or a baby boy. Or they, them. You don't need like an honorific if you're they, them. You're already cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's already all. Cute.
You're the best. You're so cute.
Yeah.
Such
hey.
A cutie. Hi.
Everyone's texting me. Hold on, let me move this over here.
Of course they are. Of course they are.
A lot of texts. Well, I've been like out of... I've been away. I've been... hanging out in the ether.
But how do you feel being home? Even though, like, I feel like this whole time for you is kind of like in flux, because you have a book coming out so soon, so it's like probably cuckoo bananas
and a half. I mean, I have never been so chill about a book coming out, but I've also never been in so much denial about the things that I need to do in order to prepare for a book to come out. Also, I feel like I've learned my lesson in terms of, like, what is effective in terms of, like, the use of my time prior to a book. And I think I've just gotten a little bit better at prioritizing. So there's, like, certain things I'm going to do. But I know that, like, ultimately what's going to crack the code is I'm going to make a few TikToks that are going to go viral. And, like, that's going to handle a lot of the promotion for me. And maybe I think that because that's what happened with the Honeys. Like, the Honeys, all the promo that I did was so overshadowed by, like, a day of TikTok that, like, beat
that
the
is
crap
so
out of...
That is so fucking annoying. That is
Isn't
so
it?
Fucking annoying. It is so annoying.
I agree. And for those listening being like, wow, That's annoying. I agree. I totally agree. I'm not happy either. But that is my, that is like, I don't want to say that that's my plan. But okay, you know, here it is. We talk about this sometimes. I know that my publisher is doing a lot of behind the scenes stuff.
Right, right.
That has a way bigger impact than like my like one-off posts here and there, because I know the people that love and adore me have been mm-hmm. looking at my content this whole time and they're going to buy the book. They're going to show up.
And you have readers who like follow you on Goodreads and like wait and like follow you on Amazon and like are right. waiting for like your the notification, like right. new release, whatever.
Exactly. And with the Honey's paperback just coming out and that being the Barnes & Noble like YA pick for August and ending, it has a preview.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm so excited timing. About that.
That's yeah. such a huge thing.
It's a huge thing. It is incredible timing. And the paperback of the Honey's, I like finally got my hands on one. I literally had to like go and buy it myself. It has a excerpt of Beholder in the very back Perfect. Of it. So it is the first time I've ever had a book that was like, did you like this? Well, check out like what's next. And I don't know. I feel like that is something that like I used to love in books, like a little preview of like the author's 100%. Next book. Yeah. Yeah. That was so cool. So
that's so exciting.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about it.
I feel like you're going to be fine because, like we said, you have, like, established readers and people. Mm-hmm. I feel like your career is such that it's very much been, like, building. It's mm-hmm. been going upwards, right? Like, with every book, it's kind of, like, especially since you started in, like, the horror genre, I yeah. feel like it's felt like you're going, like, very much in this, like, upward trajectory. But I also feel so frustrated that, like, our reliance on TikTok is like mm-hmm. so enormous. I actually, right before we got on this call, I posted on Blue Sky. I refuse to say skeeted. Do they know that has a sexual connotation?
I think that they do. I really think that they must
it
know
is
this.
Gross. I'm not doing it. I fucking hate it. Me too. Either. It's so disgusting. Anyway, so I posted that mm-hmm. like we need to start roasting publishers for not like supporting authors, and I said like specifically BIPOC authors, but I think it applies to queer authors too, because like they felt the pressure for a couple of years and then yeah. that died down and they're like back to white people and like back oh to straight God. Like back to Colleen Hoover and like yeah. the list was like the YA list last it's, week I think was like is, all white except for Jason Reynolds. That's like yeah. a fucking meme.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's that is so nuts. And I feel like people mentioned that publishing like sort of did this like big tribute to like, you know, diverse stories, especially during the summer of the protests of like George Floyd and like Juneteenth. Like we had this big symbolic showing in publishing. And yeah. then we've just been stepping back from that kind of support ever since, which is the exact opposite. The whole point of that was like to point out that like you have not put these like systemic supports in place until now, and that's abhorrent. And now to kind of watch how further back we've stepped to a standard that actually defies in a negative way where we were at before a lot of yeah. these pushes went.
It's so bad. So horrible. It's so mm-hmm. horrible. And someone on Blue Sky, I think it was Samira Ahmed actually, was like,
love Samira.
The reliance on TikTok is like really difficult mm-hmm. as well. And mm-hmm. I actually think TikTok has made everything worse because the algorithm pushes the same kinds of people over and over again. And the creators that are pushing our books, I mean, we know the queer tax on TikTok, right? We've talked about this.
Yes.
How much longer it takes for our videos to post. Whenever mm-hmm. we post about something queer, we use like a gay hashtag or like mm-hmm. a rainbow, like anything like that. It takes us longer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the algorithm pushes those kinds of things less. It's been proven that the algorithm favors skinny, light skin mm-hmm. people.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just so disheartening because it's like it's not for lack of trying. There are so many people talking about these kinds of books. I would say there's definitely more people not talking about them because they're just like, I don't care, I want to read Colleen Hoover. But mm-hmm. the people who are talking about our books are usually people who look and like have the identities that like we're writing about and like we share with them, right? So mm-hmm. they are already suffering from that like lack of boost on TikTok. So it's like yeah. a perpetuating thing. And it's, I was thinking about this so much, like I tried to make like a Discord for like authors of color to like boost one another, but I just like don't feel like it's enough. I feel like we need to start some sort of like collective that is doing more, like a sort of like community. I have not thought this through, but a sort of like community that like helps not just like push each other's content, but like help support each other on these important days, like cover reveals, things like that. Like, you know how we will sometimes, for people who don't know, sometimes we will email like our networks, like, hey, or text our friends, like, hey, I have a cover reveal tomorrow. Can you boost? I feel like we need to show like power and numbers. And I don't think that it needs to be limited to just our communities. We should let people in who want to support us too, because the more people that are in there, the better. But I just feel like something needs to be done, right? I don't want to go back to the days of just like dragging books all the time and fighting. I don't want that.
Yeah.
But I think we need to show them that we have a voice.
Yes.
You know, like we need to show them like, hey, we have a voice. Like so many of our books have done well and have proved to them that people want to read our books. And yet it's like, nobody's putting pressure on us. So we're going to go back to the same old ways. And it's very frustrating.
The version of this that I kind of keep coming back to, which I don't think is feasible at all, is I just want to start like publishing Illuminati. Like, I'm a well-connected author in publishing. All my friends are talking about the same things behind the scenes. And I'm just like, okay, then why do we need like buy-in from the larger public? I just want to start like a small coven, and I want to pull strings behind the scenes. And
of
when
course, your solution's a cult.
Yeah, it is. Oh my God, yeah, it is. No, literally. And like because you know what? Like when people run afoul in a really specific way in publishing, like I've had people that have made like homophobic comments about me behind the scenes that like you and me and a few of our friends have discussed. And within an hour, that person has been struck from, you know, like our consideration as someone that like we would go to for like a collab or things like that, too.
Right.
And this is very different than blacklisting because we're not an institution. But I will say that like once I've sort of gotten to the echelon of like having good friends with sustained careers, I find that there's way more power and energy in banding together outside of the framework of publishing, just on the terms of like peers. And I love that. But, you know, you can't rely on a peer network for delivering a systemic change, right? Like, it's just not, that's not how that works. But it is a great thing just to have as like a personally sustained like source of like, I don't know, energy and a place to go when you're like frustrated about these sort of things too. So I kind of come back to that too, where I'm like, yeah, like these communities that we form ourselves, like, of course, it's a very queer thing that like we always come back to the communities that we make for ourselves. But just like you, I want to see these changes sort of beyond the communities that I'm creating myself, right? Like, I don't want it to just be the same, you know, it's like the same like 20 of us like passing around the same $20 all the time.
That's exactly what it fucking is. Like, we're all sharing one White Claw. Like, let's get it together. Sick of it.
We're at the slumber party. One person brought like a Mike's Hard Lemonade. And like, not that's a what Mike's. We've got.
Not a Mike's. What,
I've never had one of those. I've never given it to being iced.
I feel like Danielle Walsh, you know, the one from
oh my God, TikTok,
who's
yes,
like, let's get lit.
Yeah. So for Paris tonight, let me show you what we're drinking.
She would use that as a mixer. Someone made a playlist of like, it was like, you're having Paris at Danielle Walsh's Before the Gaff.
That's the name is so of it. Good. If you all don't know who we're talking about, look up Danielle Walsh on TikTok if you're 21. If you're not, then just keep guessing. Here, if you're not 21.
Wait till you're 21.
Wait till you're 21.
And that could be your gift for yourself.
Yeah, from the Bad Author Book Club. The TikTok girl that I can't get enough of right now, she's just in one TikTok. Have you ever seen that girl who, it's like someone's just interviewing random people at the club, and this girl's clearly like, she's on something. I don't know what it is. Or she's just cool. It's hard to know. And this person's like, do you like nice guys or do you like assholes? This girl like takes the mic and she goes, an ancient man. I'm looking for an ancient man. And the guy,
I feel like I have seen this.
Yeah, the guy interviewing her is like, what? And she like looks at him and it's clear that they're having like two separate conversations. But she attempts to clarify by going like, from the 1800s.
you know.
Yeah, and then she, like, giggles at, like, her friend, and then, like, clearly her friend is like, get off the camera, and she, like, literally sprints into the background, and I can't stop thinking about her. I understood what she was talking about.
Those are the kinds of people that make the world go round. Personally, yeah, she should be in charge of this author collective idea that I just spat out.
When suddenly the answer to publishing is an ancient man. Actually, that's actually the problem in publishing, is too many ancient men.
Mm-hmm. That you've hit the nail on the head. I think that is correct. Too many ancient men. But I feel like something has to be done. Like, there's power in numbers. Like,
yeah.
It's a horrible example, but, like, when people were being crazy on Twitter back in the day, and, like, books would get canceled because there was such a big backlash. Imagine we could harness that power and energy into something positive. I think it's a lot harder because people love to just be mean.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we're being mean to publishers, they might actually get on board. Like,
let's be mean.
Mean to publishers.
Yeah.
2023.
Today's episode is Chapter 8, Countdown to the Final Simulation Exam, 3 weeks, Lex.
Oh my god.
Whenever they have the countdown, I always think of the Beyonce song that's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I know.
I can't believe that you got that reference from my, like, baritone rendition of Beyonce. Which, oh my god, not to, like, further avoid this book, but I did just see Beyonce in concert. Like, I just got back from this, like, a week ago.
Is your life changed?
I cannot believe the experience that I had. Like,
oh my god.
I don't spend money on, like, big concerts or shows because I've never felt, like, the need. But for this and for, like, the queer culture sort of in, like, the Renaissance album, I was like, I really want to see this and her. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the looks alone were, like, incredible. I could have watched that concert on mute. So I spent all of this money to, like, see it. And we, like, sat down, and within, like, two songs, you know, I was worried that I was like, oh, I spent all this money. Like, will it be worth it? But within two songs, the thought that I was having was, I did not pay enough money to see this. Wow. Like, this is so good. And
I mean,
it was great.
Beyonce's a legend. Yeah, getting to see her live is incredible. That's so cool.
It was really cool. It was really cool. But anyhow, countdown. She didn't do it during her lineup, which I was bummed about. But
she has too many good songs. What are you going
to
do?
It's true. She did hit after hit for like 3 hours. Anyways, back to Lex. So,
boo.
So, Lex is the chapter opens with 3 more weeks, says Cade, and I won't have to hide my art anymore.
This feels so empty to me. Like, I was trying to find, like, the words to describe, like, how it feels. Like, first of all, have them tell us all of these things about, like, how they've been feeling and what they've been doing this whole time. And it's like, why aren't we being shown any of these things? Like, we should feel like we've been on a journey with them at least a little bit, right? Up to this point. We are already, like, so far into the book.
This is but page 102, by the way.
Yeah, and I will also say, I think part of that is because two reasons. First of all, we've only actually been in the academy for 3 chapters. Like, this is the 3rd chapter we're in the academy. The beginning of it was just, like, her as a baby, right? Mm-hmm. And then those chapters were used to sort of, like, they were squandered. They were used to show that, like, Cassina's a big bitch. And, like, Lex is, like, so super talented. But, like, I don't feel like I got a real sense of place or of anything, really, on aside from, like, Lex feeling like she's not good enough despite all evidence to the contrary. Just don't feel that feeling of, like, oh my god, they're like 3 weeks away, like, they're gonna graduate, like, this is so exciting. I don't feel that at all. Like, I don't feel the curiosity of, like, what comes next.
Yeah,
because I don't really feel like we got a sense of this place. So I don't have high hopes for whatever happens after.
Right. Like in fantasy and in fiction, oftentimes people want to cover a much longer time span than just like, you know, a few days, right? And this book is attempting to cover years of these girls' lives. And so the authors have the really tough choice of picking and choosing which scenes they feel like indicate the passage of time, but also the development of character. I would not say that they've picked the right scenes. Like the last Lex chapter, they spent playing buzz ball or whatever.
Exactly.
And like it collapsed like what could have been a really interesting chapter into like a kind of well-written sports scene. So I was like, this is actually good writing. But ultimately, like, did that cover, like, the territory that it needed to cover in order? Like, and at the same time, I'm like, why are we doing any of this? Like, it's a high-wire act to kind of pick these scenes and curate, like, a long period of time through, like, just specific scenes. But all of this is nullified by this senselessness because none of this really feels like it matters at all to the plot.
Right.
But like start it at the actual simulation exam, start the book there, and with a few sentences here and there, like you can deploy some exposition as to Kane's character or Samantha, like them vanishing, like, but you need to find a way as an author to come up with points of exposition as they relate to the plot at hand. And the fact that we haven't actually even reached the plot on a page 102 totally evacuates any sort of urgency from what's going on in these chapters.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you just said. Like, even, like, in the very, very beginning of this chapter where they say, no more hiding away in this creation studio, no more painting with snorts and shouts and buzzes. Like, we didn't get to see any of that.
Show
like,
that. I want to see the snorts.
Yeah, like, we can't possibly be attached to this thing that's happening when we're mm-hmm. not watching it happen. Like, mm-hmm. we can't be nostalgic or, like, emotional or attached to their relationship mm-hmm. because we haven't even watched it unfold. What the fuck was the point of Buzzball? I absolutely don't understand. They're in this, like, stupid, like, underground, like, studio. I don't understand how the setting work.
Well, they're definitely underground because that's the whole point of the book, so we know that.
No. I mean the actual studio is like even further underground. Like, it's like hidden under something else.
Yeah, they're in a forgotten hallway, and basically the academy has a lot of leftover space and they've been exploring a lot of it, but they have a specific space in it that Kane calls the center of creation,
or cock.
Oh my god, you're right. It is cock.
And it says COC. And I was like, why does this say cock? First of all, second of all, they're on drugs. They're literally on drugs.
Oh my god, to be a teen rolling around in cock on drugs.
Just my dream.
So, okay, they are on drugs, so we should specify. So they've basically stolen what are called boosters from, like, the infirmary. And this is jumping ahead just a little bit. But, like, yeah, they're taking these, like, sensory enhancing, like sensory boosting drugs, basically, and looking at like the colors around them. And the second this happened, I was so mad because, okay, listen, we're complaining about the fact that we're not actually getting to see enough of the everyday in this academy to feel any sort of way about leaving behind the academy. And when you have a scene where there's a buzzball game, when you have a scene where the character's on drugs, you're actually dropping the characters out of the everyday and into sort of a little pocket dynamic where things change, right? The rules of buzzball are not the rules of everyday. The rules of being on drugs totally contradict the rules of, like, you know, everyday, right? So we're actually stepping out of the everyday to do whatever we're going to do, right? Like, have, like, a little bit of, like, a reverie situation on drugs or have, like, an intense game of buzzball. And the second this started happening, and I was like, oh, God, like, yet another chapter where we're just sort of stepping away from, like, what actually probably matters and where it's going to go and I don't even know, like, fuck around in the cock.
Yeah, exactly. They're basically talking about this, like, weird studio they're in, how Kane steals stuff all the time and it's filled with all the things that he's stolen through the years. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no surveillance at this place. Like, when you think about the juxtaposition of how much they say, like, everything is like measured and they're being watched, and yet they're stealing all the time, doing stuff they're not supposed to be doing all the time. And there are no consequences, never get caught, never a threat of getting caught. It's just zero tension.
Yeah, and you know who has consequences? Cassina. She's the only character in this academy who I feel like is being surveilled.
Well, she's a bitch, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, she's on the bitch radar because we get, like, outright Lex is, like, mentioning the fact that Kane has stopped acknowledging Cassina and that she sort of has moved on to trying to court other men in the academy or boys. I think they're like people her age, basically. But she loves him. Like, Lex knows that Cassina loves Kane and hates her all the more for the fact that, like, they spend time together. And of course, there's the usual derogatory sort of contaminating terminology that gets heaved now at Kane while he insists on hanging out with Lex. Like, you know, if you hang out with that dirt girl, you're bound to get filthy, things like that. But meanwhile, Cassina is, like, making out with every other boy and then dumping them in, like, big emotional fits, like, every other month. So we're keeping really close tabs on Cassina, I'll say that.
And I feel like this whole Lex has a line where she says she knows Cassina loves Kane. That she can tell, and it kills her that it only goes one way. Didn't that sound almost, like, gleeful? Like, and it kills her that it only goes one way. Yeah, it just feels really mean-spirited that she's, like, she doesn't say she's taking pleasure in it, but because she doesn't say how she feels, it feels gleeful, like, the way it's written. Like, that she's glad, like, oh, he doesn't like her back. Stupid bitch. Yeah.
There's also, like, this idea here that, like, the hot artsy boy is gonna always go for, like, the mysterious girl. Like, that's kind of her winning power, Lex, right? Like, we actually don't know why they really hang out, because, again, we haven't been able to, like, see much of them. And even in this interaction, I was kind of hoping, because this is clearly gonna be a scene about, like, their interest in one another, I was hoping that we get to learn a little bit more, like, why he's interested in her, you know?
Well, just because everybody likes her. That is, like, kind of the rule when it comes to these kind of really poorly written characters. Mm-hmm. The same thing goes for Tookie and Bravo. The same thing goes for, you know, the main character in Handbook for Mortals. They had absolutely no redeeming qualities, but everybody just liked them because they did. And they assumed we didn't have to get an explanation for that because my character is just so great. But she's actually a giant bitch.
Do you think that this comes out of a blind spot in the author's repertoire, right? Like, do you think it's because, like, people like Lex and Candle and the other one, like, they can't quite discern why people are magnetized to them because a portion of them withholds the knowledge that it's simply for their proximity to, like, fame and money and all of these things? Like, I can't tell how these characters, like, are just produced and how people... I mean, you know what? No, it's not, because the Mary Sue type of character definitely surpasses, like, she can be written by anybody, really. And it's a common enough mistake that, like, amateur writers make that maybe it has nothing to do with the fact that the authors are, like, wealthy celebrities. But
I don't think it's about wealthy celebrity. I actually think it's more of a misogyny thing. It's we have to have a character who everybody loves, but she cannot acknowledge why everybody loves her.
Oh my God,
she needs to not be aware of her own beauty and skill, because it's the moment she is, she becomes a bitch.
Yes.
Any character in the books that we've written so far, and, like, this is read so far, and, like, the books that sort of, like, follow these same tropes, that's, like, a very common thing. Like, she's beautiful, but she doesn't know it. Like, that's... Bella Swan was the same way. Like, she's beautiful, but she's a klutz, and she doesn't wear makeup, and she doesn't know how beautiful she is, and that's why she's attractive to Edward. Because the moment she's self-possessed and, like, aware of her beauty, she becomes Cassina. She becomes Arpeza.
Yeah.
You can't be beautiful and know it, because then you're a giant bitch and a slut.
Oh, and a slut. It's that line from the Fifth Direction song that's like, that's what makes you beautiful. Like, that song, like,
who's
the line where
Fifth Direction?
One Direction. It's just the one. Just the one.
Fifth Harmony. Fifth Harmony and One Direction. Have merged. Oh, and they're Fifth Direction.
They're one Harmony. And it's... It's that line where they're like, you don't know you're beautiful. That's what makes you beautiful. That. Like that is, and that's like the very last like moment in the song too. Such an insidious turn at the end of the song to be like, you don't know it. And that's what makes it like possible. Because if a girl does not know why like people like her or sort of like where this value ranking system sort of occurs outside of her, she's easier to control, right? Like, but the second she's in control of this, she's aware of it, she can manipulate it. And that is the biggest threat to men in incels. That's like their number one fear is that like a girl like is going to like withhold her affection because she knows her value and she knows that she doesn't have to give it. But if we keep them small and if we keep them like blind to these things, then they're so much easier to control. So you're dead on. This has nothing to do with like class or money. It's everything to do with misogyny, but I'm sure those things intersect somehow. I don't know. If there's a sociologist on the line, please call in. Let us know.
We need help.
we need some help. I don't even know.
So basically we're talking, so there was a line that I didn't really understand.
Okay.
So the only, Lex says the only person who doesn't care about Kane is little Vippy.
Oh, yeah.
Then she says she only has eyes for me. Is she gay? And then she goes, this has been going on since the Book of Indra show off session. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then it says, of course, it's me they suspect of everything.
Of being a rebel, I think.
That's very confusing. When did that switch happen?
Was it during the baseball game? No, because Vippy's
whole...
But
Vippy was the one who was...
That got accused.
She attacked Vippy and was like, you better not be a rebel on... God or whatever, I'm gonna kick your ass.
Period.
A dead ass.
She said dead.
You better not be a rebel. Dead ass. She only has eyes for me. I mean, like that. I don't know if they meant to put that there.
Yeah, I don't think us queering Vippy is gonna get us anywhere.
It's not, but I'm just really confused about this, like, order of things. I guess it doesn't really matter. So she's talking about how she can't... This frustrates the fuck out of me. Her admittance to the academy can't be explained.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very next line, top performance marks, beating records on her air speeder. Bitch, that's why you were admitted. You're good. You have skill. It's okay to say it. Like, this book, like, she keeps being confused. Why am I here? With Tookie, at least Tookie thought she was fucking ugly, right? Like, this girl knows she's good at stuff. So why is she so confused? Like, you're good. You're beating records. You're better than everybody else.
Yeah.
Have a fucking spine about it. Like, just admit it. It's so annoying. There has to be a reason, though no one can figure out what it might be. That's what it literally says. What the fuck?
This whole cadet academy is baffled. They can't figure it out. I mean, no wonder the rebellion is going so well. The cadets are fucking idiots. Ding dong. Lieutenant Ding Dong reporting for duty. So, okay, back in the cock. They talk about debut ball season and that Kane, who remember is like highborn, like would be at debut ball season, which is where Livia is about to be, right? Like he would have known her had he not decided to go to the academy. And they have a small discussion about this. Kane explains a debut ball. And of course, Lex is like, this sounds like the craziest shit I ever heard, which I have to agree with her. It probably does sound really crazy, especially if like you're a little dirt girl.
Right. She takes the chance to sort of not like other girls, the girls who are doing the debut, and says, who would want to prance around in a dress instead of blasting rebels. And she doesn't care about cohabitation like the other girls. Literally putting the other girls.
Suddenly she's turned into this like sort of like Nickelodeon cartoon where she's like, why would I be doing anything else when I could be blasting something? I'm like, you just learned this. You don't even really know about this. Like your reaction to a terrorist attack was to play like basketball. Like I don't understand how this has become the center of your personality. And what we're missing here is like a personal route to why the rebels would be like this antagonizing force for Lex. And they do make an attempt later to sort of like draw Samantha. And remember Samantha who like went missing? But yes. Even that was like the institutions, basically the orphanage is the thing that abandoned Samantha. It wasn't the rebels. That would have been so much better right. If like she just went missing and someone was like, oh, the rebels killed her during like one of their raids. Then we have a reason for vengeance. But the reason given here is that like, well, when Samantha went missing, like probably the rebels killed her. We didn't even know that. But like, that's what I think happened, which is just so flimsy. Okay. All right. So anyways, they go ahead and they talk about the debut ball and Kane explains it to Lex. I wish he would explain it to us because I still don't even fucking know what happens at the debut ball, but we don't get an explanation, just that it sounds
inane. They debut.
They debut. Do you think they're in like debut groups like authors are when it's like the roaring 20s and it's like yeah. on Facebook groups? But anyways, I don't want to get us sidetracked. She mentions that she actually is refusing during this conversation to mention Kane's weird behavior. He's distracted a lot. He's disappearing for long stretches and he's showing up suddenly without an explanation. He doesn't smile as much. So this is like a recent development. So like Lieutenant Ding Dong reporting for rebellion, like he's definitely with Vippy rebelling. Like that's what's going to happen here.
Yeah. I hate that. Again, this is just like sort of info dumped on us. There's so much telling and not showing.
Yeah.
And I know that like show versus tell is like a very tricky thing because I think at a certain point in your sort of journey as being a writer, you can actually tell, but you need to know when to tell and when not to tell. And this is the kind of thing that if it's going to lead up to a big reveal, like him being a rebel, we should have seen at least 3 different instances of him actually disappearing and acting weird, not her telling us, I'm not going to bring up that he's acting weird. Like, this is the first we've heard of it. Like, they keep introducing ideas and concepts and issues to us and then expecting us to have some sort of reaction to it or curiosity about it. But it's like, this is the first I've heard of this. It's not intriguing if you just dump it on my lap and tell me that I'm supposed to be interested in it, which is essentially what they're doing here.
You want me to solve this so quick? Here's how I would have done the scene.
Go.
It starts with Lex on like the outskirts of this like place where they're always sneaking off to, and Kane's late again. She can't believe it. He's been coming like later and later every time. She's been wondering about his activities. He's being like less forthcoming, but she attributes this to the fact that they're all stressed because of the simulation exam, and we get some details about the simulation exam and her own preparation for it. Kane finally shows up and he's like acting really sketchy and like not looking her in the eye, and she's wondering if she even knows him. But then he opens his hand and he's got like poppers or boosters or whatever the drugs are. Oh my god, a convenient explanation to like why he was late, yada yada yada, and a distraction that maybe she'll look back on later, but for the time being she wants to cherish the limited time that they have together, so she looks past it. That's how you should do this. You show that he's late. All of that information. You suddenly introduce like the pop. They're not called poppers. The boosters.
The
boosters. As like a distraction, right? But the scene starts and all of the pieces are already in place. Like all of these, they're already here. They're talking about it. So she's just reflecting. And telling us these things when all of that could have been shown. And we don't need to see the whole expanse of this relationship. We just need to be a little smarter about putting these pieces in the right order when we're constructing a chapter.
Yes, please.
Poppers.
So then they start talking about the boosters and how the ceiling is so fascinating because, you know, they're high or whatever.
Yeah.
And they start talking about how the boosters are used to enhance sort of the cadets or like the soldiers' senses during battle. And they say maybe on missions, I guess, to hear enemies miles away, to smell out explosives. And immediately I'm like, oh, things that that Lex can already do, right? Yes.
Yeah.
So then they get into that. They're like, this must be what it's like for you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
sometimes I wish I could do that stuff. Hear people whispering, see stuff through the dark.
And she's like, no, you don't.
You'd be as big a freak as me, and you're already close. Oh, my God. Get the fuck over it. It's so annoying.
Oh, he's like, you tell me if I smell bad, right? Because you'd be the first to know, right? They're, like, giggling. By the way, the boosters have different colors. They're on the pink boosters. Just, I don't think that's a relevant detail.
Just in case.
The pink ones, which the army uses to make soldiers giggle, apparently. So I'm like, why would the army make these? I think it's like a sedative, like a light sedative. So they're right. Taking these and he's making sculptures. There are sculptures from his sound paintings that he's been making. But they're still beautiful, but they're horrifying. That's the other thing. So they're sort of like contemplating these like horrifying sculptures that he's made. And this one, didn't this one have like spikes for eyes? It's like a person with like big spiky eyeballs, right?
Yeah, I kept thinking, what if it falls on them? Then what?
Then what? What now?
Then what?
Yeah.
So. You're going to hear it before it falls, Lex?
She's going to smell it before it hits her. Let's see. Hold on. Oh, let me describe it for you. Bolts, wires, and empty rounds left over from target instruction all fused together into the shape of a body, a face with spikes coming out of the eye sockets. The sculpture glares down at us. Kane describes it as you, me, everyone, I guess. Ugh.
So they start talking about how much Lex wants to kill everybody. Like all of the rock bottom scavs, she calls them. Mm-hmm. And Kane's like, and what are you gonna do? She's like, punishing them, decimating them. And Kane's like, okay, why? Like, why do you want to do this? Like,
great question.
What's the point of doing this? And she's like, wow, Kane, you are smart, especially on boosters. And I said, Miracle? Is that you? Why are we saying especially? What happened to especially? I guess not. So it's just showing her like angry and how mad she is about it. And she says, our people are getting killed. And Kane's like, hold on. Just who are your people? And I'm glad he's calling her out for being ridiculous. Because honestly, first of all, this happened, as far as I can tell, because of one rebel attack and one teacher that had this like impact on her.
Yeah.
But it feels really super counterintuitive for me that someone who has their whole life had the system against them would not immediately side with the people who are fighting the system.
Yeah, because all of her strife, her personal strife, has come from, I mean, even her not understanding why she's even at the academy, right? Like, her outsider status aligning immediately with, like, the overarching institutions that have outsided her is so strange. It is so, so weird.
It is. And I feel very confused about sort of, like, the groups of people. Because, like, we're told that people are taken from rock bottom to, like, come to be cadets. Like, her. Mm-hmm. Like, she's from the bottom. But then there's also monsters there. Are they even lower, or they're somewhere else and like terrorizing them? Because at certain points, it sort of feels like she's talking about anyone who's from rock bottom. And so the distinction there gets lost between these like monster bottom dwellers versus the people she comes from, right? Mm-hmm. And like the babies who are taken from these places, there are humans living there. So I don't know. It's very confusing to me. I don't think it's been explained in a way that makes sense to me.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, they don't explain their like personal histories to each other. Kane's like, wow, you really hate those people. It'd be hard for me to hate people that I've never even met. Great point, Kane. And she's like, no, it's not that hard. And then she says how she doesn't like share anything about number 374. That's Samantha. And that Kane in turn never clears up the gossip that his father's a recluse and his mother long dead. So let's just pocket those details for later. I don't know if that maps to anything that we know about, like, the Airborne Society up there, but that might come in handy at some point. So, okay, so father's a recluse, mother dead.
Dead. What shitty gossip.
Yeah. Oh my God. No one has anything to talk about in this place.
Well, your dad doesn't want to go outside and your mom's dead. Okay.
Yeah.
That's not juicy. That's not gossip.
So then they continue to have a discussion about like what happens after the simulation exam. I would actually love to know what the simulation exam is. It's giving like Divergent.
Same.
Which I think, oh my God, don't get me started on that part of Divergent because I love Veronica Roth, but that was not done well. Anyways, this simulation exam I think is something in that vein of like they're going to like have a tough simulation and see who like, you know, can succeed during probably a pretty zany sort of situation, right? Where they're gonna have to like confront their fears and yada yada yada. Anyways, after that though, Kane's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be put on like security detail because he's like not very good at being a cadet. Like he's just gonna be put someplace like safe and not on the battle lines. But everyone, it seems to be, knows that Lex is gonna be put someplace like secret and intense and super cool. Like she's gonna have like a secret hidden mission. So he is like, I'm never gonna see you again because like we're different levels, girly girl. Like you're good at this, I'm not, and I'm wealthy. Like you're gonna be doing something cool, I'm not.
Why can't they see each other? I'm so confused. Like you can't meet up at a restaurant?
Because we don't know anything about this world. Like we've never seen like anything outside of like the orphanage. We can't even see the orphanage. Like we see the sculpture with spiky eyeballs. That's it. But I would love to have seen, even if it was like very briefly, just like some of the like metropolitan areas that are underground, like to get a sense of like how people travel. And there was a few moments that I really paid attention to for each girls where they're being transported between like settings. And for Livia, they're just in like a car blasting through the air quickly. And there's other islands and the cities below her. And for Lex, similarly, like there was a car and it like was driving through like tunnels until they pulled up at like the orphanage or like a cadet academy. But yeah, I'm like, can't they just meet up? But I don't know. They sort of, we'll get to this in a second.
Why wouldn't they be able to?
They have a plan to meet up though. Like they're going to meet up, but it's going to be in the simulations.
I think if the idea of like a training to become a something in a YA appeals to you, I would really try Vampire Academy. And in Vampire Academy, they do something really interesting because when the book starts, the main character, Rose, who obsessed, love that character. She's already been a trainee to be sort of like a guardian to her vampire for years, right? And she has already been in the system and we meet her at a pivotal moment, but we didn't have to watch her be a baby and like get there and see the whole history. We learn about her as time goes on, especially because it is a series, which this was intended to be as well. And you would think that they would leave a little bit of sort of like information about their past to sort of seed through the rest of the book, which I'm sure they have some of that, but I think if you want something like that, they did it in such an interesting way where they set up like, once you become a guardian, your main focus and devotion is to the person that you're guarding. So it is very difficult for you to have like a personal life and like a love interest because this is your everything. Like you can never leave their side. Like this is what you were made for, basically. And I think that if there was more of an emphasis on sort of like the dedication that it takes to be a cadet and the jobs that come after, it would be a lot easier to understand without even showing us too much of the world outside of it. Instead, they're like, maybe I'll be a security guard. And it just doesn't seem very, it just doesn't seem very important. Like, why are we going through all of this then? Like, what is the point?
Yeah. Yeah. I was securing what? I don't even know what there is to secure. It's very unclear to me. I don't know. I have a very, what we need to be doing. So for our Discord members, not to like trigger everyone, but remember when we were drawing maps of like Ladorno and Model Land and like where we thought, just like a very crazy like couple of weeks when we were just like trying to figure out like, and then we eventually figured out that like Model Land is in the center of a giant like ring of like continents. We thought, I don't know. I think I'm very unclear about this, but Someone recently though in Discord did submit sort of like a napkin drawing of like what they thought the levels were here, and I'm keeping those two things in mind too. So they're somewhere on our socials if someone wants to go like look for them too. But like one of them was like rock bottom, then wherever they are now, then the surface and the air, and the other person had like a much more it was the same person redrew it, but like with the theory that like actually they're like in a dome and all of this is taking place. But yeah, I'm having a hard time with the world itself too, because we're not seeing enough of it. But yeah. they're gonna be meeting up in the archives, so that they've decided that they're gonna use one of Kane's memories, his like 8th birthday, and they're going to meet there. Because remember, citizens can like access their own memories through the archives and somehow access each other's memories. With, I don't really understand how that works. Like, do you have to grant permission? But I don't know. We know more about the archives than we do anything else. But they're going to meet in Kane's 8th birthday behind like a obelisk. That's the plan. That's what they're going to do in like 3 weeks or something like that.
Why does this have so many things that Model Land had? Not a fucking obelisk. Do you remember the obelisk that showed up in Peppertown or Ladorno or whatever?
Yeah.
Why and they ended is this up being, happening?
Like, gravestones? Wasn't that the case? I forget.
Yeah, for CL's friends who like were too ugly to go to Model Land.
Yes.
And then they died.
Yeah, they like died. They died like horrible deaths because they just wanted to be her so bad. I don't even remember the details, but yeah, you're right. I saw obelisk, I
cannot.
Oh god. So, and then we transition into like a sexual tension moment, or like a romantic tension moment between the two of them, as like they're basically talking about like maybe never seeing each other again, and Lex feels that she wants Kane to kiss her. Which like is sort of a new thing for her. She's like, oh my god, scintillating.
She mentioned a couple of pages ago, like in this chapter, that like, everyone already thought they were engaging. She used the word, I guess, like hooking up.
Okay.
But, and she said she could easily make it happen, sort of just like lean over. And she's like, no, but I don't want that. Or unless, like, it literally says like, or do I? We got a little inkling of like, oh, maybe I do like this guy. And now they're having this like romantic tension moment where
she's like, it's the boosters. And they're like about to kiss. And she's like, we'll be late for rations, which I think is so, so funny. I do appreciate the like in-world excuse. That's kind of fun. And he's like, if you say so. And so they're having this like steamy moment. And then they like get up. She like forces him up. She's like, no, like we gotta go. She erases everything from her mind because she's got to focus on the final simulation, not doing drugs with her like artsy fartsy boyfriend. But she's like unmistakably like, he wanted the same thing. Like, I wanted him to kiss me. He wanted me to kiss him. And like, there's something here. And they sort of end the chapter on being like, remember, 8th birthday behind the Grand Obelisk, like reaffirming that like they're going to meet there. And they head off to rations in the real world.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the chapter.
That is the end of it.
I mean,
thank God.
Oh, stinker. Pee you.
It's moments like this.
Yeah.
Kelly Clarkson once said, a moment like this. And a moment like this is when I realize that it's my own fault.
Yeah.
For wanting to do a podcast reading bad books.
It's you. I know. I mean, okay. So what do we get out of this? Okay, just to like summarize it, because I know, so the conversations in this book are very confusing because they sort of go everywhere. Just to distill this down into like the quick notations for our listeners. It doesn't matter that they're on boosters. This was just an excuse to sort of get them close and feeling woozy. Kane has been vanishing. Kane is probably joining up with the rebellion because we don't know what he's been doing with his time. And after they graduate from the simulation exam, he's just sort of planning to get a like ho-hum job doing like security. But Lex, being so talented, she's going to get a job doing something cool. She's dead set on like decimating rebels because she's like a rocker chick. Like, she likes to throw shit around. And Kane's like having doubts about this and is trying to kind of push her to re-examine some of these like unfounded prejudices against like rock bottom people, of which she is one. So Kane is clearly sympathetic to those people despite being highborn, a very classic type of trope in YA. And they have a plan to meet up at the Grand Obelisk in Kane's memory on his 8th birthday in like a few weeks' time, which feels ominous to me. Like, I feel like that's going to be like a little bit of a trap, but I don't know.
Yeah, that feels like something's going to happen. But who knows? Maybe it's nothing. It could very well be nothing.
That's what you missed on Glee.
That is what you missed on Glee. So let's see. What is your rose and thorn? Do you have one?
So I think that the rose that I have for this chapter is that Kane is asking the right questions to push our main character to examine really stupid sort of ingrained thought processes. But my thorn is that there is no like psychic foundation for why these thoughts exist in the first place. And so I appreciate like the challenge that he's posing to her. And it's no wonder that her protests or sort of her defense of herself sounds so stupid, because there's no actual like emotional or like logical backing to why she feels this way. And it's really obvious. And I can feel the author sort of like grasping, and what they're coming back with was just like, it made me so angry, like that, you know, I couldn't even place my rage, right? Like that sort of type of character who's just like so mad about everything, which people like that definitely exist. Like rage and high emotions can totally surpass our ability to kind of have logical thought, right? But it doesn't make for a compelling character, and that's definitely not what they're trying to do. It's just kind of what they have left to do, because they haven't put the right pieces in the right order in terms of like adding up to this really quite unfounded prejudice against like rock bottom people. My rose and thorn. How about you?
I'm going to say my rose is that we were in one place, one setting for the whole chapter. I feel like it's so rare that we're not like jumping between things, and like there's like all these scene breaks and going back and forth and time jumps. Mm-hmm. We just got this like isolated moment of them in this weird cock hidden art studio, which I appreciate. Like, I love the moment to just like have a normal scene between two characters.
Yeah.
I'm going to say my thorn is kind of related to yours, which is just like Lex's unfounded counter to what her character would probably do, hatred towards like the rock bottom people.
Sure.
I feel like part of the reason why that doesn't work is because she doesn't really have a goal. Like, from the beginning, like, we don't know what she wants. And, like, if we knew what she wanted was to get vengeance or answers for mm-hmm. Samantha, then it would be a lot more believable for her to have this, like, sort of hatred towards them. Mm-hmm. Or at least suspicion. At least, like, you know, something. But instead, it's just, like, I'm angry that this happened. And that's it. And then, separate from that, I also hate these people. She doesn't have a goal related to her friend. Mm-hmm. Disappearing.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to find out what happened to her. She doesn't want to avenge her maybe death. She's just angry about it, and she's taking it out on them, which goes counter to like what a character like her would actually do. So it feels very forced.
Totally. And I think like I actually love the idea of Lex being like really aligned with like the military. Like, I love the idea of her sort of being brainwashed and the propaganda having worked on her. It's kind of, we talk about this sometimes where we're like, you know, authors, be careful if you write a character who's like an incredible mathematician, because like you're gonna have to become an incredible mathematician to like keep up. It's sort of like Seven in Witchlings is like a know-it-all, and so suddenly like you have to be a know-it-all as well as the author.
Why did I do that?
Yeah, and the mathematician examples from Mars and the Honeys, who, like, loves physics, which, like, kill me. So, like, but at the same time, like, we did the work to make these characters sound sort of solid in their footing. If you're going to write a character right. who's, like, brainwashed by propaganda, that propaganda's got to work on the reader, too. It can't be so paper thin and transparent that, like, we see right through it immediately, but, like, the character can't, because it automatically cleaves a divide between us and the character, and we're supposed to sort of be like right next to them, like in their skin, but I'm not, because right. I'm like watching this character like do stupid shit and I think it's stupid.
Right. And we're also getting the propaganda as like something that she's telling us she knows or has heard, versus us actually being fed the propaganda or seeing yeah. it. Like, there's no pamphlets, there's like no news reports, there's no newspapers, there's like
yeah.
there's nothing that we're seeing, there's no flyers anywhere or things that show like how she's getting brainwashed.
Yes, they're in a cadet academy. Like, they could show like they could have a whole class about like genetic deformity mutations that occur because of, you know, like the mutants are a whole thing too, and like they could have like simulations that they're running that are, you know, alleged real things, like real battles where they actually get to like fight actual rebels, right? Like they have a whole simulation system. Like why aren't they using it to like brainwash these kids? That's my issue, is that these kids are not being effectively brainwashed against
Let's
the rebellion.
Go.
But
come on.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so we have some reader questions that we're gonna get to in a second. Before we do, just to wrap things up, please give us a follow on social media, wherever you like to social your media. We are on Twitter at Bad Author Pod, Instagram at Bad Author Book Club. All of our episodes are up on Anchor. And if you'd like to follow me, I am on Insta, Twitter, and TikTok at The Ryan LaSala. And I'm on Blue Sky now at just Ryan LaSala.
If you want to follow me, Clarabelle, I'm on Insta, Twitter, and Threads at Clarabelle underscore Ortega, and I'm also on Blue Sky as Clarabelle Ortega, and you can find me on my website at ClarabelleOrtega.com.
Awesome. So today's question comes from Nem from Discord, and Nem has asked, question for the podcast, how did y'all meet and how did y'all decide to do this podcast? Which is relevant because we were talking about this a moment ago in the sense of blame because this was all Clarabelle's idea. But
it was my idea.
We met because Clarabelle and I were both on sort of a similar sort of timeline with our like debuts back in the day, and Clarabelle was ahead of me, and I really like admired and was like watching Clarabelle and Kat and like Phil Stamper and all of these people that I thought were like really cool have like these fun eventful social media happenings. And so I think I responded to like everything of Clarabelle's for a little while, and then eventually we became friends because I think, I don't know, my whole goal is like always like make people laugh, so probably something I did made you laugh, I don't remember, but I feel like we like became friends because of, or a little bit after, I was on like, maybe it was like Write or Die, I think, at the time, because you were also starting that, and there was like a, I remember when you asked if I would like be on it, I was like so like, oh my god, it's like so exciting. Aww. I like admire this person, I'm so excited to do this, like what a big break for me. But that's my recollection. What's your recollection?
Yeah, I remember you as a reply guy at first. I just remember Ryan sort of like replying to like all my shit. And I was like, who is this weird gay guy?
Famously weird and gay. That's true.
All my shit. And then eventually, I think you must have broken through the noise of all the weirdos on Twitter somehow.
Probably ass first.
Probably. Well, I think also around that time, it was like everyone was fighting for their lives on Twitter. There was a lot of like fucking mean shit going on. So I was like immediately sort of like suspicious and defensive of every single person. Mm-hmm. So it took me a while to sort of like let people in. Mm-hmm. But like once I started to like really pay attention to like Ryan's like responses and like his tweets, I was like, oh my God, Ryan's actually like really funny and like cool and nice and like not a weird pushy person. And then I was like, oh, it would be really cool to have them on Write or Die. And then that made me further really like you. So it just like took me actually getting to know you. But that was hard because it's like difficult to know who to let in and who not to let in when it comes to social media, especially when like I tend to like really trust people very easily right off the bat. And I've been burned so many times. And I'm the type of person that is like, if everyone hates somebody, I'm like, well, maybe they're nice deep down inside.
Night Beast coded.
I don't do that anymore.
That's fair.
However.
So the sum of this is basically.
It took me a while, yeah. Twitter.
I made it out of Clarabelle's like slush pile. That's what happened. I survived the slush and I made it into Clarabelle's heart.
Makes me sound like such a bitch. It was more for protection. I just was like worried about becoming friends with someone who wasn't like actually a good person because I've had so many bad experiences in the author world. But Ryan and I, we have such a deep connection because we've been through very similar things. And I think that's when we really, really started to be like close friends, when we both realized how many things we had in common.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And I feel really grateful that like you were persistent about messaging me, because then I would have missed out on such a great person.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I mean, like, I didn't know anybody in publishing, and it sort of is like a baffling place to enter. And you sort of see all these like dynamics that seem like they've been in motion for 100 jillion years. And I feel like that's kind of how a lot of things in my life have gone, where I've like entered a party and I'm like, well, this is already in motion. How do I like hop into the slipstream and like feel this momentum? Right. Cause I feel like I'm on the outside of it too. So I very much have an approach of like, all right, like I know that I'm fun. I know that I'm like a good time. I've got like all these things that I know people enjoy. Let me just try. Let me just talk to the people that I think are interesting. And here's the thing. The hottest person at the party, no one's trying to talk to them because everyone's afraid of them. But I talk to them. I talk to Clarabelle. That's why.
I'm the hottest person.
You're the hottest person.
Wow. Well, and thank you very much.
As for how the podcast started, one day during the pandemic, I got this like cursed message from Clarabelle telling me about Modelland and asking if it was something that would be like fun to read. And Clarabelle, like, you guys have to understand, when Clarabelle approaches you with like an idea, it's not just an idea, it's like a business plan. It was crazy. Clarabelle had like a whole idea, like pitched me on it, like practically with like a whiteboard and like a pen pointer.
Yeah, that's how I am. That's my brain. That's how my brain works.
Right. And it's always like a like 100 texts all at once, and like it doesn't matter what the fuck you're doing. Like, you're gonna get all these texts and you're gonna have to just like sit up in bed, get up.
And you're gonna like it.
And you're gonna listen. So it was one of those things. So it was Clarabelle's idea. So if anyone deserves the blame, it's Clarabelle.
It is me. And the reason I came up with the idea is because, you know, it was the pandemic and I was very bored. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking at YouTube videos, and one of my favorite videos to look at was Marco Shiro used to have a channel and like a blog and like this sort of like media thing that they did called Mark Dust Stuff.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
They would read kind of bonkers bananas books and give summaries on YouTube. And Mark is so funny. So they give a summary on the first chapter of Modelland, and I was like, holy crap, I want to read the rest of this book. It would make such a good podcast. And I was like, but I don't want to do it by myself, because just like me talking about a book by myself would be not fun. I was like, who would definitely do this and be really funny at it? And I was like, Ryan. I was like, Ryan, guess what? Get a microphone. We're doing a podcast.
We're doing a podcast. And we did. And so here we are, like 100-something episodes later.
Yeah. Still
fighting. I mean, not 100. It feels like 100. It's probably, I mean, hundreds of hours. That's for
hundreds
sure.
Hundreds of hours. Hundreds of hours. Hundreds of uggs from me. Because I'm always like, ugh.
Yeah. Shit, bitch. Seriously. So thank you, Nem, for your question. That's a fun one to answer. And that, I feel like that's good, too, because I don't know that everyone who's tuned in for season two knows our origin. And it's funny because you can, like, listening to season one, you can hear us in real time, like, figuring out how to do this. Like, the podcast name changes halfway through. We never bother to sort of go back and like reestablish the brand. So
whatever.
It's fine. Yeah, whatever. We're here. We're queer and we are reading horrible fucking books. But yeah, thank you for the question. Please, hot queens, feel free to submit more and more. Also, Clarabelle, I don't know if you've noticed, but in absence of us last week, the Bad Author Book Club Discord like hosted their own episode. Did you see this on Discord?
No. Yeah,
so I haven't had a second to read everything yet because I just got back like yesterday, but there was like people were sharing about their own horrible book experiences, like just like the craziest shit they've like ever read. And I think one of our users tried to record like their own like mini-sode, but it was like 20 minutes and it couldn't be sent through Discord. I was like, this is so fun. Like, in absence of, like, us, like, they were like, all right, we're actually not going to go a week. Like, we're going to go ahead and provide ourselves. So
you guys are crackheads. I can't believe you did that. And I love you so much.
Love them to death. Oh, my God. We love you. And it's good to be back. And thank you for giving us the week off so that we could launch a book and finish deadlines and stuff. But
yes.
But all this to say, we will see you next week, hot queens.
We will. Love you.
Biggest kisses.
Bye. Cock on drugs. That sounds like a place in England.
Cock on drugs?
Drugs.
Oh, yeah, go yonder to cook on drugs. Haunted, you light up my world like nobody else. The way that you meow at me is overwhelming because usually it occurs at 3 o'clock. Three in the morning. Ow, don't bite me. I was singing. That song was for you.